regarding his service in World War II. My name is Michelle Clark. This interview is being conducted on April 7th, 2005. I'm going to start with the background, and what was your life like before you joined the Navy?
Well, during the Depression, the Great Depression, I wanted to go in the Navy in 1939. I quit high school. I wouldn't take me because there was not enough clues on the right side. So I went to CC camp for a year right before, because they told me probably going to go to war and they're going to lessen the standards. So I spent a year in there and I come out and I went in the Navy in 1940.
Why the Navy?
Well, my brother was in the Navy. He'd been in for 3 years, and I thought it was a lot of traveling, and I believe some of the propaganda that told me about dancing girls on every beach.
What was your family?
This was St. Paul, Minnesota.
So what were they doing for a livelihood?
My dad was a railroad man, and he was working out in the NP, working extra for it in the Depression. Young to hold a steady job. He'd been with the railroads every day sometimes. My mother was a housewife. I had a sister, graduated from high school, my older brother went away, and I had two younger brothers.
Were you single?
Yes. I stayed single until I came to Montana in 1941. My sister.
What did what was your family's feeling? You talked about your brother being in the Navy, so how were they were feelings towards the military?
Well, they had no problem with it. Dad wanted to go in World War I, but he had a daughter and it was deferred, so he always felt bad that he couldn't go in, but he loved it. They were very proud of those kids going there. And they, you know, they needed one less mouth to feed.
What were your perceptions of war?
Of the war?
Yeah, well, of war. Did you think it was a possibility that you might have to serve in?
Oh, yes. I knew that we'd probably be in war no matter what President Roosevelt said. You know, in his speeches he says we'd never serve overseas. Well, that was all wrong. But I knew he was coming. It was just the way the world was going. The papers were full of it. I've been an avid reader all my life. I read everything that was about wars and everything.
So what was your feeling about the Germany and Japan?
Well, I didn't have no hard feelings to them. They involved in one country against another. And a lot of veterans, you know, they still hold grudges against the Japanese. I don't know. It wasn't personal. The only people I was mad at, Roosevelt, Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin, and Tojo for getting me in this mess.
I don't think it's changed. On your pre-interview, you mentioned that you'd been at station at Pearl Harbor. Were you?
Right.
Where were you?
I went to boot camp at Great Lakes, and then after boot camp, I started a new program. I was expanding the submarine force. They asked for volunteers from boot camp. Up in that time, you had to serve in the fleet at least a year before. So we was they selected 10 of us, and they eliminated 7 right there with the physical. And they got to New London and went to submarine school, and they eliminated about half the class there before we graduated.
New London's where?
Connecticut. Submarine base. And, you know, we had to go through the pressure chamber, and we had to make an escape from 100-foot deep. And, I was sent to San Diego, going aboard the submarine tender, and taking me to Hawaii to go aboard the USS Sargon. We got to Hawaii, you know, everybody loves this book. They went up in the Yuma Tower, well, the Sargon's in Marion, California, and they're over. So, I got a ride in the cruiser back to Mare Island, and I looked at that submarine. It was completely tore apart. Manholes off, holes in it, hoses all over. The little guy with a white hat turned upside down was real deal. And I saluted like I was trained. Permission to come aboard, sir. He said, damn it, don't call me sir.
Yeah.
I'm not an officer. That's where I started. I thought, yeah, I made a mistake. But they gave me a notebook, said, learn anything about submarine, you got to qualify, you got 6 months to do it. And I studied hard, and I qualified in 4 months. And that was a money reason. I went in, I was making $21 a month. I graduated from boot camp at $36 a month. I made seamen. First time I went up, I went, it was 10 months. $54 a month, $10 extra for submarine pay, and you got 30 when you qualified. So I qualified, and I was making $84 a month. Families living on.
Yeah.
We were in Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Before the war started. And the Summer War Games of 1941, the Sargo snuck under all the destroyers and crew to escorts to battle. Pennsylvania, the flagship. And they said, no way, it couldn't happen. They don't believe you. The submarine admiral said, great. But we did that. Then they sent us on a practice war patrol in July or August of 41, just going out. And it was out for 30 days or something. Come back in September, they said, we're going to go to the Philippines. This department was transferred because we need to help out there. So we wound up in the Philippines, and Admiral Hart had a different idea. He said, we're going to war, no doubt about it. Pearl Harbor, you left port Monday morning, so junior first, senior last, and then Friday, reverse order. And he says, here, we operate 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, we run without running lights. This is war, we're going to war. We was in port, we man guns, we stay in port a couple of days, we finish and go. Come back in a couple of days before Pearl Harbor, and they said, the Japanese fleet went down past the Philippines. They thought they was going to attack. They kept on going down to Borneo and Indonesia and that way. And so they kind of relaxed things, gave us liberty. I went ashore. There was a Japanese cruise ship there. It was on a Sunday. And went ashore, and we stayed over, and was coming back early the next morning. Saw headlines in the selling papers on the street. Japanese attacked. And this guy that met me with the upside down hat become my buddy. He had 11 years in, he was third class quartermaster. That's the way it was then. And I said, well, do you think they attacked us? Oh, no, no, they attacked Russia. That's the way they thought. We get down to the pier, and there's no ships, our ship was gone. And we thought, well, what are we doing now? My buddy said, let's go uptown and get a beer, and we'll figure this out. So we turned around, and the shore patrol appeared with a 45 on it. He wasn't allowed to wear a weapon in foreign countries. Where'd you go? I said, go get a beer. He pulled a gun out. And he says, you try to pass me, I'll shoot you. We're at war. So he said, well, where's our ship? And the boat came in and took us outside. It was in the Elder Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Got rid of everything, like the strip ship bill says to do. Before they had a sign for everything. If you lost anything, you know, you would go to mass at least. And here they told me, you take this your motorboat over and dock it on that free water there and just leave it there with all of these awnings and everything. Oh boy, I'm in trouble with it. Chief told me to do that and I did it. And I went to sea that night and I didn't know what to expect. I was scared. Never expected to be in court again, really.
Well, that brings me up to one of my questions. About when you were in the, how much time did you spend in the Philippines?
Well, we was there from September to December 8th. And after December 8th, which is December 7th.
So you never... Where was your base?
Manila. Yeah, they had a... Cavite, they had a naval shipyard there. The Asiatic fleet at that time was made up of World War I, four Piper destroyers, an old cruiser, the Marblehead, Houston was a more modern cruiser, and S-boat submarines, little old things that looked like toys today.
So Manila was where you went when you needed supplies?
Well,
and
we went in there and anchored, we got our supplies from the Navy Yard to Cavite, and we bought fresh cruisers. We left that day, but we'd taken on practice torpedoes, really, because we were going to go out and fire again. We was firing torpedoes day and night. And we had to go alongside the tender, offload them, take on water shots. This is one thing I'll never forget. Our exec was J.D. Falk, all Academy officers except one reserve officer at that time. He just came over. And he said, we go alongside the tender, you take a shower, because we leave here. All showers are secure. We have enough water for drinking and preparing food for the batteries. There'll be no showers. And I told us that you bathe daily, you shower daily, and if you're in the tropics more often. And he said, Bartholomew, we'll all smell alike, so who cares? And what they taught us before the war was nothing like changed. Day to day become night. The good news ahead in the daytime. Because the waste materials surfaced, you get something. Later submarines come up, they have a sanitary tank. And that caused a lot of problems. Pain, suffering. You know what I mean? The air conditioner, we had air conditioner. It was a modern submarine.
Well,
but it didn't work. And you go submerged all day, 14. We go about an hour before sunrise, and surface an hour after. And in that time, it got over 100, 110 degrees inside with the air conditioning on. After 8, 9, 10 hours, a cigarette wants to be lit. And, you know, I was in trouble.
How about sleeping? Were they hot bunking?
Well, they started that after the war. We all had a bunk before the war. But when as soon as the war started, they found out they had to have more people. We used to have three sections. But in wartime times, you go port and starboard. Even in port and starboard, we didn't have enough for lookouts and all that. So they had to bring more, and then they hot bunked it. I was fortunate. I was senior enough then, and I didn't have to. We had some youngsters coming aboard.
What was your crew total when you began, and then after?
60. It was 54 enlisted men and 6 officers, and it went up to about 72, 73, something.
Not too much of a change.
Not it, but you know, some of them carried more because they wanted more people. Some carried more officers because they wanted to train more officers.
What were you doing when MacArthur and the
when he left?
Yeah.
When he retreated, we was trying to catch up to him. Him and his family. It ain't his family in front of him. Everybody else had senior family home. And we went out the South China Sea, our first patrol run. We met 4 cruisers, the third and fourth day out, Japanese cruisers. We couldn't catch them. We could only make about 9 knots submerged for an hour at the most. And then we sailed a merchant ship, it was about 1,000 tons, and the captain says, well, he never missed it. Practiced wartime, always right under the target, hot straight and under the hull. So he says, line up one tube, a small ship, one torpedo. We fired a torpedo, and we heard an explosion. We all started cheering. We got one. And he looks at the periscope and he says, hey, he's not synced, he's turning the wrong way. And the exec had timed it, and it was well off 15 seconds, that's when it armed.
Mm-hmm.
So we finally had a torpedo problem. And we fired 13 more like that. They wouldn't leave. There was their ordnance, you know, and people watched, there's no way. It's your fault. You do it, prepare them. And then they sent an expert on a commander out to show our torpedo men how to prepare the torpedoes. And I don't know if you know anything about torpedoes, but they got a gyro that controls them. Well, he went to put it in, he put it in backwards. And he was commander, and our torpedo officer was JG at that time.
Mm-hmm.
He says, commander, you put that in wrong. And that guy says, don't tell me what I'm doing. And finally he looked and he saw his mistake and he bailed out. But then the admiral out there, he set up a net and he fired the torpedoes and found out they were around 30 feet deep. And they prematured, and they were supposed to, they had a magnetic explosion, Mark 6 was a new thing. And it was supposed to explode under the magnetic field of the ship. But if that didn't, and the torpedo hit the ship, it'd go off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We fired them, and they bounced off the hull of the ship. So they went, the admiral out there trying to convince Admiral King. He finally did this illegally, and he almost got busted. But they took that back there, and Admiral King believed him, and they found out the torpedoes, the firing pin, it was a hair short. Wouldn't hit the deck with it. But all the skippers out there was telling me that, and they kept telling them, no way, you're doing it wrong. Our skipper lost his command over that, because he fiddled with it. He was an ordnance officer.
Did the pull-out effect, any morale, or did it have any...
Us?
Yeah.
No. Well, we'd left, and we was out there, and then we found out that he'd left Wainwright behind and pulled out. We was on patrol, and they got orders to go to Darwin, Australia. And we thought, oh, that's great. Some of the old-timers had been there, and we pulled out, and we were going down, and they told us to refuel in Bellapapa and Barnegat. So we pulled in there, and we thought, boy, we get showers, and, some fresh food. We'd run out of food. We'd been out 50-some days. We get in there, they had a Dutch army of 1,000. All they had was fresh water for us. No laundry now. Our laundry, we had to recycle. Okay, we're going to call it over. Oh,
yeah.
Talk about stink. We get in there, and we fuel, and we leave there, and then one of our submarines ran aground in Castle Straits, uncharted.
Mm-hmm.
And we went in and tried to, captain said, well, we're going to run on the surface. The orders was to submerge. We surfaced and run, and boy, he got chewed off by Pearl Harbor, told him, submerge. You're going to endanger yourself going to rescue them. Well, we got over there in a Dutch, we couldn't get in close enough. The Dutch ship saved him, and we went to Sarabaya, Japan. The Dutch had a base there. We went in there and had a rest camp, and they gave us 4 days up there.
What did you do while you were there?
We washed our clothes, and we got good food, and we had some beers, and we did a lot of recreation, and we was getting ready to leave, and the commodore there was mad at our skipper for pulling the torpedoes. I said, you take off all the torpedoes you have, and we loaded 600 in some cases of 30 caliber ammunition, and hauled it to the Philippines. And then,
what type of recreation?
On board?
No, when you were at the camp.
Well, whatever we wanted to make up, that was it. That was nothing. We could swim in or whatever. But we had no organized recreation.
Just whatever the mind could think of?
Right. Whatever you want to do. Go hike, go swim, go fishing.
Still sounds cool.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, but the Japanese were just starting to invade there.
Oh, yeah? How... is that... No. How, did that happen while you were there?
Yes, yes. They blew up one of our destroyers there, in the dry dock there. And we had to bail out of there.
Were you, so you were on your sub when it...
Well, no, well, I wasn't. Oh, I had I got an infection, and they had a doctor, a Dutch doctor. It was a foreskin infection, because I couldn't shower.
Yeah.
And pharmacist mates go up there, and they'll do the clip job, and they'll go back and forth. Well, they started bombing. Well, I was in the hospital getting prepped. And so I took off, and Sargent already bailed out and left me there.
How'd you manage to?
Well, they had a part of the staff was ashore there. And I went over to them where they were, a new building, and they said, well, here, they gave me a sack full of detonators, and there's troop cream going across here. You take that and go to Chilichap, and one of our submarines, the Howland, will pick you up there. The Howland was a mother ship, and she picked me up and took it to Australia. And Sargent went up and dumped off the ammunition, come down to Australia, and when it was morning outside of Fremantle, an Aussie pilot bombed it, dropped two bombs on it. Wrecked everything, all the heads were dropped, there was porcelain heads, all light, all glass, gone. And we're going to stay there and walk through. We were fixed up again. Oh. Did it get ahead of you?
No, I just kind of wanted to change the order of things. I wanted to ask a little more about before the war and basic, and you went at Great Lakes.
Right.
What was it like at
Great Lakes? Fun for me. It was really fun. It was all drill. It was drill all day long. You didn't have no classroom like they got today. You know, we marched with rifles all day long. Close order drill. And, we went out lifeboats. There was no motor whale boats. It was open water. We did all that. We swam. PT and they let us ragged. Daylight to dark, but it puts you in good shape. Really.
Yeah. What time? So it was.
It was May. I started in May of 1940.
How many weeks did you go?
It was 12 weeks at that time.
Still about what it is.
I wound up back there as a gunnery officer in the 60s.
That'd have felt good.
Yeah. A different story.
What was it like though to be submersed with people from different areas of the country?
Well, we had our crew. It was close knit. They did everything together. We played ball. We had ball teams. You know, we went ashore together. We hung together. We didn't have anything to do with the fleet. You know, it was just us. And we got to know everybody intimately. You know, we knew everything. So the next year. Sure, but, you know, at submarine school, I had a good time until they took us down on the World War I submarine for the first dive. You know, it was creaking and groaning when we were going down the Thames River. And steam and water when they dove, and I was scared.
Yeah.
Then the river was diving officer, he said to me, hey, you take the bow plate. Well, we had a simulator up there. I got on there, and a couple minutes, he says, hey, you're doing a good job. That's the first compliment I'd had in the Navy, because everything else...
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You're dummy.
Did you go 12 weeks straight, or did you have time for recreation?
Well, no, not in boot camp. It was 7 days a week. I think we took off on Saturday and washed all our clothes, scrubbed his clothes by hand. you know, they were still rolling the uniforms at the time. You know, and we had an inspection every Saturday morning. You know, they out your bag. Everything had to be exactly spots, your whites, your blue, your socks. But I liked it because it was, you know, I didn't mind it because I worked on a farm in the summertime and I was used to hard work. And in fact, I really enjoyed it, except when they made me third-class petty officer. That was the worst experience I had because everybody wanted something, wanted to get away with something. In fact, I went and asked the chief, I says, please, you know, take it away from me. Can't do it. He says, you gotta learn to do this. This is part of the leadership training.
Yeah, some things don't change. How did you end up in ordnance?
Well, I went aboard the Sargo, and they wanted me to be a quartermaster, and I thought that my buddy was a quartermaster, so I thought I'd try that. And when we left, he showed me, we had an automatic pilot to steer the ship. And he showed me how to do it, and we were going across the Pacific, and OD ordered me to shift automatic pilot, see? And I shifted, but I had it reversed, and it was a complete circle. So I go to California, and he was livid, and I don't know whether they fired me or I just decided I'd be something else, because they had a guy in there, he retired captain, a good buddy of mine, and we talked, and I got to see each other once twice. He was first class gunner. He said, I need a striker. So, you know, I hunted in Minnesota, hunting and fished, and I said, okay, and I went to ordnance, and that's how it started.
What's a striker?
Well, he was like an apprentice gunner's mate, so we called him strikers. I don't know what they called him.
I'm not sure. It's all new.
How
about, where were you when you found out about the victory in Europe?
I was in the victory in Europe. What was it? I was in June. I was on the, ninth war patrol on USS Longfish. See, after five war patrols in the Sargo come back to Omaha, Maryland, Island, I got a set of orders and a good friend of mine, he was town chief, he keeps saying, are you lucky guys, get off the side. Well, I went to the Bonefish and first for one of the runs we sank 20 ships. Now on the Sargo, we sank our first ship on the fifth run, and we fired eight torpedoes at it. We had a division commander with us, and we had to go up and punch holes in with the gun to sink it. So he says, you know, you got orders. I said, I didn't have nothing to do with it. They put a note in the bulletin board, go to London. And I put the Bonefish in commission. In the Sargo, we had a crew in there. The average age was 23, 24. Mostly petty officers. They had all the way up to, you know, 20 years in. And, third class, 8, 10 years in. Before they, that's how race was then. And, here I was a rookie, and I go, I'm second class gunner's mate, I go to the Bonefish, I'm in charge of the gunnery department. There's 15 of us that have been in since the war, and we had to train 50 rookies right out of boot camp on that. And it's amazing that we took them, and in 3 months, they did it our way. And there was no one, you know, we go to another ship and they said, well, that's your baby. This is the way we do it in the John Paul Jones They didn't have a, they couldn't say that. It is our way. And it's just so like the skipper, a very good friend of mine, we talked as many times before he passed away. We taught him right, the way that worked for us and it worked for the Bonefish. Same as one ship, she got three Navy crosses and so we started. And I got a bronze star, two bronze stars.
What was the Bonefish doing when the news hit?
We was on patrol. We was on our fourth patrol on her. I think we was just returning. We fired all our torpedoes and was heading back to the Greenland.
What was the feeling?
Oh, we was all happy. We were celebrating. They had rest leaves for us there 2 weeks. It puts up the hotel and do what you want. The horseback riding, shooting rabbits, dangling, dancing with the girls and all this good stuff.
What about when victory over Japan?
I was in Panama in my third submarine. I was after I come back from the Bonefish, I was supposed to get new construction, and Captain Hogan was getting a new boat. The chief of the boat was the chief of the boat. I get to New London and they tell me, now you're going down here in a school boat. And I said, I don't want it. And they said, you have your choice. And they made nine patrol runs. And so I asked them where Captain Hogan was. And he was chief engineer for the Atlantic or something. So I went down and asked him, what happened, Captain? He said, well, they grounded me too. He says, they got to train these people and they need a suit for this. And I tried it for a few months and I kept begging the personnel officer. In fact, once the last time he saw me, he said, if I ever, I was first class, if I ever see you in this office again without me sending for you, you're going to go mess cooking. You're going to be the only first class gunner's mate to ever mess cooked in this name. And I got out of there, but when I was, Captain Hogan told me, get your best uniform, be up the auditorium tomorrow, you're going to get in the bronze star, and going up there. And, the personnel officer, he was up to call up me for that. I was, in fact, I almost left. I got up there, and he presented me to him, and he pinned me down. And then the personnel officer says, I was down there. Come down and see me tomorrow. I got a surprise for you. I was down there, getting noticed in the construction. For Toronto Recommission. And that crew, it was all veterans, all had the local patrols, and you know, it was kind of wild. It was hard done. You know, you talk about peer pressure, I was terrible. We was in Panama. We were just transiting the canal, we was heading for the war zone. The Bonefish, when we got to Panama, we went right straight to Brisbane. So I operated out of Australia. Most people wound up I was happy. But when the war ended, you know, I'd be a chief then. Chief in the Navy. Yeah, chief. Dumbest chief in the Navy.
How long did... Were you able, given leave or... change? Did you stay with the Bonefish?
The only time I got leave was when we come back to the States. You know, after my patrol ends on here, I come back. I got leave going cross country. 30 days delay would report into New York. In Sargo, I never had leave. Until I come back and where I'm in 43.
When the war ended, did you get leave right
away?
Oh,
yeah, I had 60 days accumulated, and we didn't get it right away. We was at, we was at Pearl Harbor operating. The war ended, we went out there, and we were still operating, you know, the 5 days a week back again. The reserve, everybody with points was leaving and going home, and we was keep training new people. It was very discouraging. We went on a torpedo exercise on a Monday and we fired a torpedo and we was operating at USS Henderson, the destroyer. And Captain got up and looked around, and I says, all clear surface, on the surface alarm, and we surfaced under the Henderson. After he took his last look, the Henderson turned and went right over us. Yeah. And so there I am, and it was the Golden Reed be chief of the boat. Okay. And I got shook up with that, and I said, well, I don't know. And the captain says, he made admiral, by the way. And he says, I want you to be chief of the boat, I'm going to do a new submarine. In China. And I says, well, I want to go to Gunnery Hydraulic School, Washington, D.C. I hear there's all kinds of fine things there. And he said, oh, okay, you know. And so I went for that and went to Washington. And that was a big turn in my life because while I was there, I took a military law course. It opened my eyes. Everything they told you about court martial, that was wrong. And I tested the system. You had to have a year at sea to make chief. So I went to sea in a destroyer. And when I got my year in, there was permanent appointment. Then I started testing the system. I had a lot of fun. I was doing court martial, first class gunner's rank of mine for, I don't know, some frivolous reason. And they closed the wardroom, you know, like they usually do. And I went up there and opened the door. Well, they had a seaman guard. He worked for me. And he says, you can't go in, chief. And I said, well, that's okay. I'll take care of you. I'm going in. I went in and sat down. The exec says, what are you doing in here, chief? I said, I'm just observing to see what's going on. He says, this is a court-martial, closed. It's not according to naval law. And I quoted him what it says. It's a federal court. And he got red in the face, and he says, I'm ordering you out. That's the direct order. I said, okay. And I got up to the left and went down to the quarter deck and told the OD I'm going ashore. He's at Norfolk. He said, now the exec says you can't leave the ship. And I said, well, I got to see the chaplain. I got an acute need to wish. And I went up the base and I went and seen the chaplain. I told him I'm in trouble. I wanted a legal officer, and the legal officer set me down. He said, well, you're right. He says, the skipper, they're wrong now. You're absolutely right. But I said, you know, I put in for recruiting duty, and the skipper has a sign of request. He said, how long is that been? I said, about 6-7 months ago. He said, what? I said, well, I keep asking him and the exec, and he says, he get around to it. He said, he can't do that. He says, he's got to approve or disapprove in 30 days. I said, well, okay, who's going to tell him? He said, well, go down there and tell him. He was a four striper. He went down there. The skipper ordered him off his ship. Yeah, really. Well, the next day he got a dispatch from the Bureau. He would approve or disapprove of a bunch of them requesting forwarding. I was walking on eggshells, but I didn't know the price. That's why I said it was the best thing that happened. And I got, you know, I took a warrant and that worked out amazing.
What was it like when you went home?
Well, it was very different. There was no one I knew. You know, everybody was working or they got married and went off. And you really, I was too busy doing their lives, you know. I didn't, it wasn't very interesting. I loved to see my parents there, but, you know, after 2-3 weeks sitting around top in the van, then I was ready to go again. But, it was all entirely different, you know. You never can go home and have it.
Keep in contact more with your Navy buddies?
Oh yeah. Sergeant shipmates, there's 8 of us left that started World War II together. 5 or 6 of us was down in Laughlin, Nevada here about 5-6 months ago. We have a reunion every year. And a couple of them can't travel anymore. And I'm the youngest. I'm 83. But only younger by a couple of days or so.
What was it like, the reactions when you came home?
Well, parents was, people was, you know, they're really, there was a businessman there. He owned a bar, and I went there, and he had me talk to the Midway Rotary Club, you know, at noon. This was in 43. He wanted me to tell them about the war, and So I can't tell you anything. We was out there, and, you know, we got bombed, run out of the Philippines, and I started to say faulty torpedoes, and they says don't tell no one that, you know. But it was different, very different, you know. I was just no one there. Either, you know, most of them was in the service during the war by that time.
What was it like when the war was over and you came home?
Well, about the same, yeah. They was always glad to see you. A lot of celebrations, and, you know. People always treated us good. I never had no bad things after World War II.
What were your expectations when the war ended for yourself?
Well, I was chief, but I thought I'd get out, you know, and I went back to St. Paul. In fact, my time was up. I took a discharge and took a leave, and you had 30 days to re-enlist at your same. And I went back to St. Paul, and I was looking around for a job. People were working at Minnesota Mining or Brown Big Load around the railroad, and I didn't want anything like that. And then there was a guy, he owned the St. Paul hockey team, he had a nightclub, and he introduced me to a guy that was the president of the Holland Furnace Company. And he offered me a job as salesman. But I got to hanging around with him, you know. We'd go out, he had a girlfriend, and I had a girlfriend. We'd go out and drink and dance and have a good time. And Jerry, the nightclub owner, he told me, take that job, Bart. He said, you gotta remember, this is all over. We're no longer buddies. You're doing your job, he's doing it. It's all a good different world. I said, you tell me not to take it. He said, no, I'm just telling you, think. Think before you do it. Because he's a buddy of yours now, you're having a good time. You're gonna work for the buddy system. So I looked around. I couldn't find anything that would be a challenge, so I decided that I'd just re-enlist. You know, chief was making, I think, $150,000 a month or something like that. And I thought, well, I might as well go back and get all these schools. And I went to 13 different schools. And took all the courses and everything in the world. Did you ever go to the ABC school?
I was a seaman, and I was a deck dog.
It was atomic biological chemical warfare, and that scared. This was in the 60s, so it really scared. But it's about the same thing today. I'm talking about
Nuke school. They do that at nuke school.
Yeah.
I was would have been moving towards Folsom, Maine.
What's my brother? He was chief on Folsom. But you know, I've told people over the years, anybody asked me, I told our two sons the same thing. But I would talk to recruiters, listen to all the propaganda, get all the literature, what they're doing, and who's going to tell you the truth, and then go out and find somebody, one or two people that just got out of the service and told them, tell me how it really is. And that's what our sons did, and one went in the army, and the other one went in the Corps.
How you feel about the military is.
Oh, I still think it's a great career for the right people if you want to do it. And, you know, when I was on recruiting duty, I used to encourage women, you know, go to college, become a nurse, go in there, and you're the boss, you know. You've got people that clean the bedpans and all that. You just tell them what to do. And if you want to go in as a listed person, go ahead. I mean, you can get duty overseas. And teachers, I used to tell the teacher, I'd go to high school and talk to them. And say, listen, teach for the State Department. The Navy hires teachers overseas to teach in their schools. You get to see the world. You get officers' privileges, lieutenant commander's privileges, pretty decent pay, and you go over there and have a good time. You know? But go into the military for the right reason. Not because you want to get away from home.
Do you think veterans are given much respect today as they were during, you were in with World War II, Korea, and you were even in a little bit with Vietnam?
It's probably back pretty close to what it was during World War II. Korea was all right, but Vietnam was bad. You know, everybody got jerked around. You know, it was just a bad scene. You know, I don't think anybody would admit that they liked the military or wanted to be in the military and to do with it. I loved the Navy. And I loved all that, but I wore civilian clothes when I was off duty. As soon as I could. After the war ended, I bought two suits, and that's the way I went ashore. I was in Miles City. Navy sent me there as a recruiter in 49, and my wife was a waitress in the cafe there. And I went out with some of the boys, and on Sunday afternoon, I came in and I ordered ham and eggs. And she says, well, how do you want your egg? And I says, cooked, of course. And she looked at me and she says, who are you? And I said, I'm a Navy recruiter. And she got a real puzzled look on her face. And she walked down and I see her giving her a telephone. Next thing I know, Bob Folks, the cop, is there. Come in and he says, what'd you say to Betty? And I said, nothing. He said, what? He said, well, she called the police station, want me to arrest you for being out of uniform. Her uncle was in the Marines, and her dad was in the Navy, and her uncle was a retired Navy submarine chief. And she thought, wartime, you had to wear your uniform. And she couldn't see why I was running around Miles City in a suit when I was a Navy recruiter. No, right now I think there's pretty good feeling for the service again. We went to pedal in and swing back. World War II was excellent. The troops were great at times. But not as great as Australian troops.
Yeah.
They still treat you good.
Love this question. How do you feel about how